from the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with the author Ali Condie, whose novel Matched has a new life from Penguin and is being re-released in honor of the book's 10th anniversary. After its release in 2011, the book was followed by the series sequels Crossed and Reached. In addition to being the author of the number one New York Times bestselling Matched trilogy, Ali Condie is also co-author of the Deep Dark Middle Grade series. She's the author of the novel Summer Lost, an Edgar Award finalist. A former English teacher, Ali lives with her family outside of Salt Lake City, Utah. She has an MFA from the Vermont College of Fine Arts and is the founder and director of the nonprofit Write Out Foundation. Matched introduces readers to Kasia, who has always trusted the society to make the right choices for her, what to read, what to watch, what to believe. So when Xander's face appears on screen at her matching ceremony, Kasia knows with complete certainty that he is her ideal mate, until she sees Kai Markham's face flash for an instant before the screen fades to black. The society tells her it's a glitch, a rare malfunction, and that she should focus on the happy life she's destined to lead with Xander. But Kasia can't stop thinking about Kai, and as they slowly fall in love, she begins to doubt the society's infallibility and is faced with an impossible choice between Xander and Kai, between the only life she's known and a path that no one else has dared to follow. I spoke to Ali Condie last week by phone. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I wonder if we can start out by just talking about the 10th anniversary of the book and how it's being reissued right now in this deluxe edition and how that feels as the author.
Well, it feels surprising. It feels like 10 years went by very, very quickly sometimes, and then other times, particularly the last four, it feels like, well, been decades, you know. So it feels like that feels surprising, both that much time has passed and that it's only been that much time. It also feels surprising in a very lovely way that the readers keep finding this book, because 10 years is a long time for any book to be out there and in the world and have new readers continue to find it. And so that is lovely. I guess you sort of hope for that in the back of your mind, but to have that happening is a continued gift. So it feels great.
Yeah.
And we had a good time putting the content together and the new edition together. And I am with the same publisher, publicist, editor, and agent that I was 10 years ago.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is also unusual.
Yeah.
It is. And so that felt really lovely as a team to revisit that as well together.
Yeah. Now, the book is part of a series of three, correct? Matched,
right.
Crossed, and Reached. When did the last of those three come out?
So they came out each year in November, one after the other.
Okay.
And so it was November 2012 when Reached came out, which was the third in the trilogy.
Yeah. Okay. So that's already still a while ago. So it's fun that you have probably
right.
kind of a whole new generation of readers that are discovering this now, I would imagine.
Yeah. And with high school, you know, the readership turns over every 4 years. So we're almost on generation three.
Yeah. Wow.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Now, the ideas in the book seem really, as I was reading, I was like, wow, this is prophetic. I mean, this is written a long time before the last 4 years. Do you have thoughts about that? Did this strike you as you were going over it again in preparation for this anniversary edition?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for reading the book. I appreciate you taking the time. And second, yeah, I mean, when you're writing dystopia, you are taking, it's not rocket science, I don't think. You're taking things that you see happening in the world or that could happen, and you're extrapolating, you're making it worse, taking it farther. But certainly when I wrote this book, because I began writing it in 2008, it felt a little more escapist, like this is what could happen, but it's a hopeful time and probably will be fine. And then later when you're reading it, it feels, you know, 4 years later when I finished the series in 2016, it feels like, oh no, you know what, we are going to do all of these things. And that does feel disconcerting and disappointing, although I feel like we're on a little bit of a wave of hope again, which I love.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there were some of the things that felt predictable in the sense that if we didn't get on top of this, it would go badly. This is definitely a world that has experienced climate change. So that's something that was happening back then and that we have done nothing to ameliorate and in fact made worse. And then also in the third book, it turns out there is a pandemic, which I wrote, and it's a fictional pandemic, but I consulted an immunologist and a pathologist on it to make it feel realistic. And the parallels there are, I did not anticipate that. I mean, you always kind of know there's a global pandemic coming, but to see how how this has gone has been surprising too. And that's not until the third book, but still.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's take one step back from what I just asked you. And I want to ask how this started for you, the original idea. And I'm also curious if it's hard to recall the writing of a book that was born so many years ago. Is the material all still very immediate for you? Do you remember your creative choices? I am curious about that.
Well, that's a good question. Yes and no. I very much remember getting the idea for the book and writing the book. What makes me laugh is that by the time you've gone through revision, every now and then I can't remember, ooh, what did I do there? I can't remember if it was the first choice or the third that I ended up going with.
Yeah, that's how I would think.
and not on big plot points, but on smaller ones is usually where it comes in. But yeah, I feel like the idea came in the form of a conversation that I was having with someone, and we were talking about, you know, what if we wrote the perfect algorithm? Because back then there was still online dating and Match.com and eHarmony. It's since exploded. I don't think Tinder was around there, but around then. But we were thinking, what if it actually worked? And what if the algorithm was so perfect that people just sort of gave up on everything else? And then we took that another step further. What if it was so perfect and the government was in charge of it? And so that was where the initial idea came to be. And I used to be a high school teacher, mm-hmm. and I also used to chaperone the dances. And so once I had that initial idea, I thought, well, what would it look like the matching up and the pairing off? What would make it appealing so that people would go with it? And I immediately thought of high school prom,
yeah,
which in our case was held at the courthouse, the city courthouse, which is a really pretty old building. And it was sort of a traditional prom for when I was teaching. It's still that way, I believe, in non-COVID times, where they would roll a red carpet down the front steps. The parents would gather outside. The couples would be announced. They would walk out to grand applause. And of course, this was a really, really special, beautiful night, a chance to see people in dressed up and everything. But like everything else in high school and in life, there is also sort of a darker underbelly, you know, people who couldn't go with the people they wanted to because that would be seen as wrong. People who didn't get asked and were at home. All of those things, there's always nuance and there's always an undercurrent. And so when I was thinking, what would that look like? And I thought of prom, I thought, oh, yeah, exactly. So that was pretty heavily influenced. It's not a prom in the book. It's something called a match banquet where they get dressed up at 17 and find out who they're supposed to marry, who the government's picked for them. But it was very heavily influenced right on down to it's at a government building. And I wonder how much all of that, which had happened years earlier, came into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought as I was reading that it's really fun to think about our cultural norms. You know, we used to have like just dating classifieds, right? And then there were like, so that's pre-internet. And then there were dating sites. Now there are dating sites. And then you kind of start to further project it, like you said, into the future and imagine what could change, what could go right or go wrong. Do you feel like just that basic approach is a lot of what dystopian literature kind of harnesses and does?
Yeah, exactly. I think it takes, we wouldn't sign up for these things if they weren't good, right?
Right.
My brother met his wife on eHarmony.com, and she's the most delightful human I know, and they're very happy. And I think it's done a lot of great things. But then we're humans, right? And so we always have to take it too far. You know, we joked as parents of little children, we would say, well, we didn't, you know, have the maximum amount of play date with them unless someone left crying, right? Because you would have left before while everything was still fine. But I think that's a really human, I don't know, feeling or tendency where if it's going great, then we want it to just keep going and nothing can go on great forever. So yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think that is what we're doing a lot in dystopian fiction.
Yeah. Okay, great. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about this world that you've created. And we have sort of talked about the matching. There are wonderful other little things in the book, just the ideas that kind of line up to help you create your plot. Singles, aberrations, the society, the emergency tablets, and then I loved the artifacts. I don't know exactly what I'm asking you, because to some extent I'm asking you to tell us how you wrote this book. But like, when it comes to coming up with ideas like these, how do you approach that? Is that an answerable question?
Yeah. No, it absolutely is. So I think of ideas as they often start out as little snowballs. And if you've made, you're in Burlington, which I know is very snowy. I've been there. Yeah. I did my master's degree in Montpelier. So did I. Yes. Probably a similar one.
Yep.
So, and you get a little snowball and you get it rolling with your kids or whoever, and you're making a snowman. And sometimes it's just not the right snow. Nothing sticks and you abandon all hope. Mm. Or you end up with one that's pretty leafy and gross. But there are those little snowball ideas that just keep attracting more and more, keeps clinging to them, and you end up with something buildable. And that's what happened with this. So, like I said, I had the idea for the opening scene and the book opening with that match banquet. And then I thought, all right, what kind of world exists around this? What would it look like? And other little things started hanging on to it, because I always built the world around the character and the situation. That's not the only way to do it, obviously, or necessarily even the right way at all. But that's just how it works for me, is the world needs to exist to support the character. Mm-hmm. And of course, the character is a product of the world, but that's not what I come to first. Mm-hmm. And so as this was going along, I thought, well, they probably have something special. You can't take away everything and have people buy into it. That's largely why communism often doesn't work. And so I thought, well, if they had a modicum of choice, sort of, then that would be different. And once I figured that out, that influenced everything.
Yeah.
So they have 100 poems, 100 songs, 100 this, 100 that. So there's this sort of feeling like, well, there is variety. We do have things when they really don't. And like you said, the artifacts, everyone gets to keep one thing from their family and pass it along. And so in her case, the artifact is given to her by her grandfather, and it's very important and plays a big role in the story.
Yeah.
And then the 100 lists, those are things that kind of came about because, and we're seeing a little bit of it now, the 100 best books of the decade.
Yeah.
Or the 100 best books of the last century, or the 100 movies to see before you die.
Right.
And those are interesting lists, and I'm a sucker for a good list, but also they're heavily white male-centric always. And they also assume that if you do these, then you don't really need to read anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, or that you've checked a box. And that's a very dangerous thing to think, I believe. So anyway, that's kind of how I started getting the ideas to continue building the world, is both that idea of, oh, what if you have some choice, but really, really not enough.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's a great answer to what I was concerned would be not a very good question.
Oh, no, great question.
Let's talk about planning a series. When you started Match, did you know it would be a series or not yet at that point?
No, I had no idea. I thought I was just writing this at home. I had a new baby in 2008 also. And so it was just this actually really fun project. Like I said, it felt more escapist in 2008.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would write this book now, or it would be very different. But no, it was fun. I feel like it was a project that kind of, I don't know, just kept going when I wasn't expecting it to keep going. I would think, oh, I'm out of steam. And then I'd wake up in the night with an idea. And that's not something that's happened to me a lot.
Yeah. Now, so my next question, I'm just curious, did you ever, like, when you were writing Crossed and Reached, did you ever get to a subsequent plot line and wish you had done something different earlier to ease the way forward? Did you ever go like, oh, no, I should have done such and such?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, when I wrote the first book, nobody wanted it. I mean, nobody knew it existed. I had no agent. it was just kind of fun and for me. And then I thought, oh, I should take this out and publish it. But then, and I didn't know if it would be a trilogy. I knew I had material for more books, but I also wanted the first book to feel somewhat complete in the sense of her character arc, that you, I had taken her from one point to another.
Right.
So that remained the same. But yeah, as I was writing the other books, particularly book three, is very fun to write because you've been saving and planning and you have all these moments that you've been waiting to write. And that is just total bliss. That's super fun. But especially regarding the pandemic, which I did not know I was going to do for book three until I was into book two, there were so many small things I had said in book one when I was trying to write a believable illness that would have changed. So yeah, I mean, you take notes, you write things down, you think you know what you're doing, but there's always, and it's always something dumb, something you just wrote as sort of a scene descriptor or an offhand comment to make the world more rich, and you have boxed yourself in accidentally.
Yeah. So here, I'm going to ask another unaskable question, maybe unanswerable. But and part of the reason is that I don't want to give anything away or talk too much about the plot of the book. But there is this moment, like early in the book, we can say that her best friend is matched with her. Correct? Because that's part of the description of the book.
Yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm.
And so as I read, it occurred to me that, you know, whereas sometimes if you write something coincidental into your plot, it can seem too easy or too... I don't know. It can seem like a mistake, but I've never thought about being able to use coincidence in a better way. And in some ways, a coincidence where she's matched, for example, with her best friend, that can kind of smack of something else. It can seem like a manipulation or a red flag to look at more closely. Does this make any sense?
Oh, yeah. No, and in fact, that plays out across the series. Is this a manipulation or a coincidence? Yeah.
Yeah, and I really loved coming to that conclusion as I was reading this, because I was like, oh, I have to stop thinking of coincidence as something only to be avoided and also look at it as something that can be very useful. Yeah, anyway, that was just an interesting moment for me as I was reading and thinking about writing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Sometimes we avoid coincidence so much that we box ourselves in a different way.
Yeah.
Because coincidence does happen. And I totally agree.
Yeah, it's fun. Let's see. Who do you see as your audience and how much do you feel tied to a predetermined audience like, let's say, YA or middle grade or whatever, as you're writing? Do you kind of think of it in terms of what the publisher says your audience is, or do you just write for yourself still?
I still do just write for myself, and it's just about the character. So this character happens to be 17, therefore this is a young adult novel. And then I was supposed to be writing a different book a couple of years ago, and I started writing what turned out to be my novel Summer Lost, which ended up being middle grade, but I didn't think it's time for me to write a middle grade novel.
Yeah.
That's just the next book that came. She was 12. And so, no, I mean, of course, I think about it in the sense that you want the voice to be right. Mm-hmm. And so if the voice isn't right, you've got nothing. That's just writing 101, of course. So usually the voice is the thing I'm thinking about that most pertains to what age group is this. But that's not something I really think about until the age group part, until we're in revision and lining that all up for publication.
Mm-hmm. And when you first submitted this to agents, did your query letter say, I have a YA novel that I'd like you to look at?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I do tend to write for young people, certainly, I think that's part of having been a teacher and a young person myself. And then I also have kids who are ages 9 through 17. And, you know, when I wrote this, they were much younger. But that's kind of the thing that I'm thinking about is, if I am thinking about anything, is, ooh, I want my former students or my current children or whoever to have fun reading this.
Yeah, that's a more personalized way of figuring it out and thinking about it. That's great.
Yeah.
Now, you narrate Matched from Cassia's point of view in the first person. Did you ever play around with any other perspectives as you were working on the book?
No. So she was always first person, and she was always first person present, which is what the book's written in.
Yeah.
Which it was not a choice I was expecting to make. I think, yeah, I don't know why I did that. I think it just made it feel more immediate. I believe I had read, The Adoration of Jenna Fox, which is by Mary Pearson, who's a fantastic young adult author. Uh-huh. And she had written that in first person. I think I had read that fairly recently, within the last 6 months or a year. And I remember thinking, wow, first person present makes it feel so immediate. So, right. So I was lucky because I think I'd had that in the back of my brain. So I didn't have to try to figure that all out again. But, you know, with the narrator, I had some ideas. But there have been other books since, certainly, where I've really struggled with, is this third or first? So that was a lucky thing that doesn't always occur for me.
Yeah, yeah. Did you play around at all with reading other works out loud to kind of get into the voice before you found Cassia's voice?
No, hers was a pretty... That one came to me more easily than most. And so I didn't know. That was just, I fine-tuned it over drafts. And right. I did many, many drafts. But I didn't have to fight her, really, yeah. The way I have in some other books. Yeah.
Okay, great. Can you talk a little bit about methods for building suspense? And one of the things I noticed is that you very often would end your chapters with wonderful little cliffhangers that, you know, even if I didn't have time to keep reading right at that moment, I was always like, I want to keep going. It was very good. Very well done. Do you want to talk a little bit about like that and maybe any other things that come to mind?
So a thing that I've thought a lot of about when I'm writing chapters is, I think, to feel fulfilling. At least for me as a reader and a writer, I like a chapter to have both a sense of arrival and departure. Mm-hmm. So I like to feel like, and I don't mean physical arrival and departure, that would be a nightmare, but just we learned something, or we got a piece of information, or we were interested, or we got information that made us feel interested in reading more, but then also we're moving forward. So we got that, and now we're on to the next thing. I don't really know how to describe it very well. I think I'm doing a pretty bad job of that. But
no.
What I think about is, what did we arrive at and what are we now going to? And again, not necessarily physically. It could be mentally or emotionally or some other way. Yeah.
No, actually, I find that a really useful answer. I think sometimes, just from the perspective of writing something, it's so good to have another frame to put it in rather than just the specifics of the book. And so that, the arrival and the departure, you know, that can be applied a little bit more universally to lots of different plots that might need some suspenseful infusion. So I like that answer, actually.
And after I wrote the series, so I didn't know this then, but I know now, one of my teachers at Vermont College of Fine Arts, where I did my master's degree, said, if you're really struggling with a chapter ending, go up and you may have written past it. And that does not work 100% of the time, but it is surprising how often that works, where you do have a good chapter ending, you've just written past it.
Which faculty member?
That was Tim Wynn Jones.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about character development. And you say that you found Cassia fairly easily. Was that true for like Xander and Kai and any of the other characters in the book? Is there anybody that gave you a hard time?
Yeah, well, so both Xander and Kai end up being narrators in the series. So in book two, it's Cassia and Kai narrating. And then in book three, Reached, Cassia, Kai, and Xander are all the narrators.
Oh, okay.
I didn't plan to do that. It was a nightmare. But it ended up being that was how the story had to be told, because we had to know what was happening in different places. And then I realized that this was their story too, primarily hers, but also they are important. That was tricky. I had to figure out how to write their voices and their guys, and they're very different boys from each other, and I wanted them to sound separate. And so I ended up building soundtracks for both of them.
Oh, wow.
And so I would listen to like a playlist for Xander, and then I would write only Xander chapters that day, or only Kai if I could help it. And sometimes I'd have to go into a Cassia chapter or one of the others, and then I would have to go back and kind of re-listen, get back into the different voice. So that was tricky. Yeah, the first book was easy. The second two were really hard to get everybody's narrative voice right.
Okay, great. And I've been saying her name wrong. I'm sorry. So it's Cassia.
Oh, no, it's just that's how I heard it pronounced initially, so that's what I go with. But I always tell people, however you say it in your head is right, because there's nothing harder than trying to change the pronunciation of a character after you've had it one way.
Yeah. Okay, great. My next question is sort of twofold. I always like to ask if my guests have read anything lately that they would recommend. And I also am just curious, because you write dystopian literature, what dystopian literature might have affected you as you were coming up as a writer or influenced you?
Oh, yeah. What fun questions. So I just finished a Louise Penny novel. It's her most recent one. She's an adult mystery writer, yeah. And it was called All the Devils Are Here. And that one, so speaking to wanting to change things, she has a character in there that we've seen before in the series. And then in the acknowledgement, she says, in a previous version, he had children. I realized in this, a previous novel, I realized in this book that he would not. So he no longer has them. Well, that's one way to do it. Just take the acknowledgements and say, sorry, made a mistake in an earlier book in the series, and just ignore that. So I loved that.
She's hilarious. She was on the show.
Was she? Oh, yeah. My gosh.
It was really fun. She was in Burlington to give a talk, so I went and met with her at the hotel where she was staying, and we met in the library, and there was a fire going. And she said, this is a great room for a murder. I hope it's you and not me.
Oh, that is great.
She's very funny.
That is very funny. Well, I just love that. And it was a great book. But I thought, yeah, don't box yourself in. We'll forgive you. And you have to be a good enough writer, I guess. You have to be Louise Penny to get away with that. But that was pretty great. Novels I've read recently that I've really enjoyed. I just finished Nina LaCour's latest book, Watch Over Me, which is beautiful. She's a young adult author. We share the same editor, and her writing's exquisite. And then I also read recently Jason Reynolds' Long Way Down, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know, are you familiar with that book?
I haven't read it, but I'm aware of it, yeah.
It will blow your mind. And I don't even worry about overselling it, because it's impossible to with Jason Reynolds, but and particularly this book. But it's a novel that takes place over the course of an elevator ride, and you will not stop turning pages once you start. So
wow.
He's a genius. That was fantastic. So those are two books that I've read recently that I really enjoyed coming up through. So I'm old, I'm 42. And so my...
Well, then I'm ancient.
No, I always say that to the kids' school visits, and they're like, yeah, you really are. but yeah, so I came up with the old school stuff, right? With 1984 and Ray Bradbury. And so those are my biggest influences, are probably Orwell and Bradbury. There's a short story called There Will Come Soft Rains that Bradbury wrote about this house that keeps on functioning after the nuclear holocaust. And like everything Bradbury writes is just intense and stunning and unique and different. And even in something like this, you're totally haunted, but there's this sense of play that he always has in his writing that I love. So those are the books that I was reading, I think, that influenced me the most heavily. Oh, and also I always say A Wrinkle in Time, even though it's sci-fi.
Yeah.
There's something about that book that feels very dystopian to me.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Well. So, yeah.
I mean, what was the thing called that runs that?
I think it's called It.
It.
It's this giant disembodied brain, right? Yeah.
Right. It was so fantastic. You know, it's funny because I feel like that book would make such a good movie, and yet they've tried a couple times, and I personally have never found that it did the book justice. I love that book so much. Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
Okay. And then what are you working on next?
Oh, I'm not allowed to say a lot about it, but I can say that I remain with my same team, which is really fun at Penguin.
Fun.
And so Penguin Dutton, and same editor, all of that. So I am working on a new young adult novel for my editor there, Julie Strauss Gable. She's fantastic, so brilliant. And I also just finished a couple of things that are newly out. So I write a middle grade series with Brendan Reichs, who's another author, called The Dark Deep. And that's a super fun series. And we just, a month and a half ago, released the third book in that series. So The Dark Deep series is... we kind of wrote it for reluctant readers, actually. We wrote it for everyone, but we kind of thought, what if he just hated reading. What's the kind of book that we could write that might convince you otherwise? So we pitched it as sort of Stranger Things meets The Goonies.
Oh.
And it's about kids solving a mystery. And it was so fun. The thing about writing with a co-author is you just, if you trust your co-author, which I do, and if you're good friends, which we are, you end up just having a blast writing it. And I think that does get reflected in the pages. So that was a really fun project.
And is that somebody you... Oh, sorry. I was just going to interrupt. Did you meet that person through your master's program, or how did you meet the other author?
That's a really interesting story, actually. So we became friends. Our books came out around the same time, 10 years ago. So we've been friends for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we both were on the boards of Y'all Fest and Y'all West, which are the some book festivals, the largest young adult book festivals in the country. So we just had a ton of paths crossing over and over again. But we live on opposite sides of the country. I'm Utah, he's North Carolina. But then we were at one of the dinners for this festival, and he came up to me. And he came and sat by me, and we were just chatting because we've known each other forever. And he said, "Do you know what crazy thing I want to do?" And I was like, "No, tell me more." And he said, "I want to go to that master's program in writing for children and young adults at Vermont College." And I got super quiet because I had the month before applied to have been accepted by that exact program. And I kind of stopped telling people. I had told one or two writer friends, and they all said, "Well, why would you do that? Why would you go to school for the job you already have?"
Right.
And I thought, because I want to get better at it. I've never taken a creative writing class. I'm totally self-taught, and I know there's so much more I could learn. And Brendan was a lawyer and had also never taken a creative writing class before he became a writer. And so he was the first person who not only didn't think that was a stupid idea, but he brought it up. And so I told him, we both just kind of looked at each other, and he was like, "Wait for me, I'm going to go too." And I said, "No, I have to go now or I'll never go." But he did end up coming. And so we became better friends during the program, because it's a low residency, as you know, 11 days
right.
every 6 months. And so, yeah, that's when we got to be really good friends. And we kept getting put in workshop together, even though we never asked to be. So we started to get to know each other's writing really well. And we thought, oh, you've got different. I mean, he's a very strong writer, but he's fantastic at plot. And he felt like I was really good at character, and
yeah.
he thought, hey, it'd be fun to try this out, writing something together. So
that is amazing. That's like a set of coincidences that's worthy of like a dystopian novel. So.
It is, right? Yeah. And the fact that, I mean, we were friends, but for him to say, he said he hadn't told anyone else that until that point.
That is so
it
wild.
Was just lucky. Yeah. Yeah. Lucky.
Great. I feel like I interrupted you when I asked that question. Was there something else you were going to say?
No, I was just going to say, I did have another novel come out at the same time this last book in the Dark Deep series did, and that was the paperback version of The Last Voyage of Poe Bly, and that's actually a companion novel to the Matched trilogy, so you can read it on its own.
Okay.
But it is you will see a character crossover, and it is a different part of that Matched world. And that was a really fun book to write. It took me a while to get into the character because she was very different, or to know the character. I always really liked her and was fascinated by her. But she's a character who something bad happens to in the first chapter of the book, and then she spends the rest of the novel exacting revenge. It's sort of Mad Max Fury Road, but and that was super different from Matched, which is a little more, I don't know what the right word, it's gentle, but it's also got a lot going on, but it is more gentle in this book. So that's something that I still had on my mind is getting that book out there as well. But I do have something in the works, and it's really fun to write. And also, as a lot of writers out there are probably finding who have children or pets or lives, I guess, it is kind of hard to write during a pandemic. I keep thinking, I'm going to Taylor Swift this thing. And then I have four children on four different Zoom classes and I don't write a thing that day. You know, I'm going to hunker down and write something and surprise everyone. But we're all just, most of us kind of just chipping away where we can. I think,
exactly. That's so true. Let's see. So I like to finish my interviews up with asking for advice for writers. And in your case, I thought I would ask for advice for writing a story And I know that your work appeals to more than just young adults, but writing a story maybe that mainly looks at a young adult audience, blending a personal story, maybe a love story, maybe not, but also a larger backdrop, something political or cultural or philosophical. Do you have advice for writers who want to take that kind of idea and run with it?
Yeah, so it always starts with the character for me. I know I've said that, but that's just how it is. And so the thing is with teenagers is they're fully realized people. And so it's very easy, I think, to take a fully realized or a teenager and write about them because they're fully realized people with thoughts and hopes and dreams and ambition. And they're also fully realized people with a lot more hope and energy and new ways of thinking than older people. So I think it's the perfect intersection of all of that, of capability and brains and just enough experience and empathy, and then combine that with all this potential. So I feel like all teenagers, and we've certainly seen this in recent history with some of the kids who have come forward after the school shooting, where they've led where nobody else was doing it. And it's super discouraging to me that they're having to do this, that we as adults are failing them so badly, but it also is amazing that they're doing it. So that's kind of what I think of as, okay, who's my character? And yes, the most important questions to any human being are, who do I love? What is my mark going to be on the world? Who am I going to do that with? How am I going to step forward into my role in this world? But every teenager cares about something that has political implications. Every teenager cares about something that has global implications. And so it's, you know, I feel like this is such a cop-out answer, but it really is, who is your character, and getting to know them and figuring out what it is that they care about. And then that will sort of explode the larger things for you.
That's excellent advice. I want to mention one more time that the name of this book is Matched. It's part of a series by Ali Condie, and the deluxe edition has just come out in honor of the 10th anniversary of its publication by Penguin. Ali, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was a delight.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was an interview with Ali Condie. You can learn more about her work on her Twitter feed, at Ali Condie. This week's Write the Book prompt was generously suggested by my guest, Ali Condie, who advises taking your character, or yourself, on a walk into a wood. Ali says she's very loosely defining wood. It can be any grove or stand of trees. This can be a desert bristlecone forest, a forest in the Amazon, a cold white Vermont forest, the pines up the canyon near where Ali lives in Utah. Somewhere in this wood is a clearing. There's a bench. There's either fire or water or light, depending on what you or your character need most in this particular wood. Someone is waiting for you. Who is it? Sit down and talk to them. They will give you one thing. What is it? Will you take it with you? Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. If you listen to the show, you know I've been closing out regularly with thoughts about the pandemic, and encouraging you to support authors by attending their online events, reading their blogs and virtual book tours, and finding your way to their books. For all of you who are trying to write, be sure, as I say every week, to check the archives of Write the Book, because each episode offers a prompt written out on the podcast site under the recorded interview, which also includes the prompt toward the end. I would love your feedback about Write the Book. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors or if you have events to announce. Be sure to tell your friends about the show and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. We are also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Pandora and lots of other podcast sites. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates, and you can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. Do know that the podcast has over 600 shows archived. So there are a lot of wonderful conversations with authors, super smart authors, really fun conversations, lots to learn there. If you like the show, please rate it. where you listen to it, and like it on Facebook, and tweet about it and talk about it. So after the show's theme music today on WBTV LP, I'll be playing music from the playlists that Ali Condi listened to as she wrote the Matched series. So for her character Xander, one song that was on his playlist was Grapevine Fires by Death Cab for Cutie. For Kai, a song on Kai's playlist was Close Your Eyes by Young Love. And a song on Cash's playlist was Silver Lining by Rilo Kiley. I won't be able to play these on my podcast due to licensing concerns, but you might like pulling them up on Spotify or wherever you get your music and listening on your own. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.